I'm Chris Farrell, and this is On Watch. Welcome to On Watch, everybody, the Judicial Watch podcast, where we go behind the headlines to cover stories that the mainstream media would rather you not know about, where we try to recover some lost history, and where we try to explain the inexplicable. And when it comes to inexplicable, today we've got a great guest. We've got a story that is, that he owns, that he has broken the coverage of, and he continues to add to it every single day. We're very pleased to welcome Darren Beatty, the founder of Revolver News, to On Watch. Welcome, Darren.
Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Darren, when you started, when you founded Revolver News, you came at that project with really a very impressive personal background. You're a PhD from Duke University, where you taught there as well. You were in the Trump White House as an advisor, analyst, and speechwriter. So you're not just some guy with a website. You're a guy with very serious credentials, an academic, a White House level advisor and assistant to the president, and now somebody operating in the news media. So I'd like to say that you're smarter than the average bear. You're not just some guy with a website. And I encourage...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I said, well, thank you. But the truth is, I think we've enjoyed success in the news media, notwithstanding the credentials that you named. I think most of my colleagues at Duke, if you told them you have to, you know, run a media site, it would be bankrupt within a week.
Yeah, that is true. But in your case, Revolver News has really found a niche and is growing, I think, exponentially. And we appreciate the work that you do.
Thank you.
In the intro, I mentioned this January 6th pipe bomb case, the story around it. And you really own it. You've broken it literally years ago. And you've been consistently adding to this story, adding to the coverage, adding to the public awareness about it. And it's a conundrum, right? This is a... More and more evidence keeps leaking out. You keep developing the story. For those people who are not familiar, kind of walk us up to where we are right now with, okay, pipe bombs on January 6th. So what? And then, and what's developed to this point?
Well, that's a great question. I think it is an interesting and important exercise to relate the story to someone who's only vaguely familiar, if at all. And I think I've done it enough that I can kind of condense it to the, you know, the Cliff Notes version and cover the most salient points that should shock people to the degree that they want to go and look through the entire archives of our reporting to fill in all of the dirty details. And there are many such dirty details. So what is the pipe bomb? What is the January 6th pipe bomb? Well, you might recall, viewers might recall, that there are two pipe bombs discovered on January 6th. There is a big deal made about it. And, you know, frankly, there should have been a big deal because this event that's been blown up to be, you know, one of the biggest domestic terror events in the nation's history, these pipe bomb explosive devices were the most terrorist-like thing, the closest thing that resembles what we would recognize as a terrorism-related issue on January 6th. Writ large. So it makes sense that they would have made a big deal about these, one discovered by the RNC and one discovered by the DNC. But there are a lot of weird things going on with this. And, you know, they use the severity of this to amplify the whole narrative that they wanted of the domestic terror and this and that. They said, oh, we found explosives and therefore we have to up our security and in the lead up to Biden's inauguration. It played into the narrative that they've been trying to shove down our throats for years now. Of course, the reason that this narrative is important, just, you know, to step a bit further back, people saying, oh, why should I care about this? Let's say, you know, January 6th, the whole thing is a hoax, which it frankly is. But let's just say someone says, OK, it's a hoax. So what? There are a lot of other things I need to worry about. There's inflation. There's, you know, the world's, you know, crumbling. This is over 3 years ago. Who cares if it's a hoax? We know the government hoaxes. But There might be some truth to that, although there are people rotting away in prison on the basis of this hoax. But the bigger issue is this hoax has become the principal pretext through which the national security state has reinvented itself, repurposed itself as a political weapon of the regime. This whole narrative of Trump supporters, and even, not even Trump supporters per se, but any kind of person adjacent to the movement or the energies associated with the Trump movement could be rendered as a kind of de facto assumed terrorist by our government, and that the apparatus of the government designed to go against terrorism is now weaponized politically against, over half the country. That's really what's at stake, and that's been at stake for a while. And more recently, we've seen in terms of 2024 that January 6 remains a very live issue, and in fact is the principal legal pretext, sham legal pretext, by which the regime is attempting to remove Trump from the ballot, and so basically win 2024 through extracurricular means. So this is to say that this is a very important issue. There's a lot at stake in this false narrative that we've been fed.
I agree.
And
I agree. And I also think it's important to note that this pipe bomb carries the designation of a weapon of mass destruction. And that's magic language to the, as you said, to the law enforcement and intelligence, the security state that we're operating in, because that allows all sorts of expanded powers and efforts when that term or that phraseology is used.
Yes, absolutely. The government considers pipe bombs to be weapons of mass destruction. That's their official classification. And so I've always maintained there's been two major domains of research, dimensions of research that we've conducted in relation to January 6. One, I think, is very familiar to, I think, the general public at this point, is that is the curious case of Ray Epps, as it were. And we, kind of made him a household name, and he acknowledges us. He's not very happy about it, but he and the DOJ acknowledges Revolver News as the primary culprit in this regard. And that might be the one thing that they're actually correct about. But we reported this in a two-part series called Meet Ray Epps Part One and Meet Ray Epps Part Two. And I always said that's one smoking gun of January 6th. The other smoking gun is the pipe bombs. As it so happens, as the pipe bomb issue reaches its culmination point, I predict that there will be a convergence of these two stories. And I'll maybe get to that later because that's at the frontier of our research at the moment.
That's very
So
interesting.
now let's step back. So people say, okay, these pipe bombs, they found them. What's the big deal about these pipe bombs? Well, to believe the official story, you not only have to believe one piece of information, one anecdote, one piece of reporting that is so improbable as to defy belief. I call it infinitesimally improbable. But it's not just that you have to believe one infinitesimally improbable event. You have to believe a concatenation of about six infinitesimally improbable events that all have to have happened together in order for the official version to have any purchase. So maybe let's start with a more recent revelation that helped this story gain escape velocity, because now there used to be such a mismatch between awareness of the Epps versus awareness of the pipe bomb. And part of this is not that the pipe bomb story is less flagrant or less important. It's simply the way that people consume media. It helps for there to be a visual element.
Yeah,
And the Ray Epps story.
they had a face. They had a face and they had a video of a guy yelling. And so
Exactly.
Ray
No, it
Epps
was
is very identifiable that way.
the Ray Epps story was tailor-made to be viral
Right.
by his own behavior. You have a video of this suspicious guy in a Trump hat and camo gear saying we need to go into the Capitol, and then he's right there pre-positioned at that initial decisive breach point at the West Perimeter and all the other things. It was made to go viral. The pipe bomb thing, for those who had the time and interest to actually read through the reports, It's similarly striking, but it didn't have the benefit of that video until recently. Congressman Massey has been excellent insofar as taking up our research and using his powers within Congress to take it to the next level. And one thing that I commend him for tremendously is he got a 7-minute video released that depicts the DNC pipe bomb being found. And one thing that's immediately striking is it shows Secret Service. Shows a person we know to be a plainclothes Capitol Police officer walk up to the Secret Service. Secret Service is, by the way, protecting Kamala Harris, who's in the building. That becomes important. I'll get to that in a minute. But the plainclothes officer approaches Secret Service, tells them there's a pipe bomb literally within feet of them. And what happens next is striking. They have no interest in it. They're utterly unconcerned. They stay in their vehicles for over a minute before getting out. Whereupon they proceed to stand about like nothing is important in the most lackadaisical fashion imaginable for an additional 2 minutes. And then the flagrant sort of made-for-TV money shot moment is the Secret Service agents allow a group of school children to cross the street in the direction of this pipe bomb, not warning them, nothing. They're not concerned for themselves. They're not concerned for these school children. They're not concerned for their protectee, Kamala Harris. Then the kids go by, and then a Capitol Police officer goes up to the bomb, right up to it, snaps a photo, gives a thumbs up sign. Then, for the first time in the entire 7-minute video, they actually hustle and get the heck out of there. Now, I know for a fact that after that video, this is just 7 minutes, it's public. After that, what they did was they got a bomb-safe robot to defuse and dismantle the bomb. Really? You're not worried about it for yourself. You're not worried about it for your protectee, Kamala Harris. You're not worried about it for these school children, but then it requires a bomb-safe robot.
And
Give me a break, so.
the image of the pipe bomb that has been made public,
Yeah.
or what is purported to be a pipe bomb, let's put it that way,
Yeah.
has a kitchen like egg timer on it.
Right. We're
And it,
getting to that.
yeah,
Yes.
okay, because I was going to say,
Yes, we're getting to that. So I
supposedly 17
want to
hours.
start with this issue. So
Sure.
Kamala Harris's Secret Service clearly knew that the bomb was fake by their behavior. They clearly knew that it was fake. Otherwise, unless they don't care about their own lives, Kamala Harris's life, these children's lives, it's clear they knew it was fake. The question is, how would they have known that this bomb was fake? And just to kind of intensify the suspicion here, I mentioned they were protecting Kamala Harris. Now, Kamala Harris is probably one of the most politically opportunistic animals in the animal kingdom, as it were. Why wouldn't she milk politically the fact that she came within a hair's width of losing her life to this ostensible MAGA domestic terrorist pipe bomb?
Right, you'd hear it
You know,
every 2 minutes.
just to give you a sense of how desperate they were to make January 6th this deadly act of terror, and the lengths of exaggeration they were willing to go to. One of the first things that we covered and debunked in relation to January 6th is this false story about the death of Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick. Originally, they were telling us the MAGA mob bludgeoned this guy in the head, bludgeoned him to death with a fire extinguisher. We exposed that as false. They changed their story to, oh, he died as a complication of bear spray. We actually did a heat map image analysis and showed he didn't actually get sprayed the way that they said he did. So now then they settled on, okay, he died of natural causes. But the fact that they were willing to lie about that so aggressively and so transparently indicates how desperate they were. And yet, here in the case of Kamala Harris, it's like the one thing that they wouldn't have had to lie about. She actually was in the building. She actually was within feet of this device. The idea that she almost lost her life is totally congruent with the narrative that they've been trying to shove down our throats about domestic terror. So not only did Kamala Harris not milk that politically, she covered up the fact that she was in the DNC building. It only leaked out about a year after January 6th, and she still has not acknowledged it. For that matter, Joe Biden, you know, it takes if he stands up for more than 5 minutes, it's something important. He's got, you know, limited energy here. He gave a speech on the third anniversary of January 6th for over an hour. That's how important January 6th narrative is to them. And I mentioned earlier what's at stake here. He doesn't think to dedicate a line in that hour-long speech to mention, oh, by the way, my own vice president almost lost her life to the MAGA pipe bombs. No mention of it whatsoever. And so this is just sort of motivational to get people to think, how dark and how dirty and how embarrassing does the truth have to be for Kamala Harris not to take advantage of that politically and, in fact, to cover it up?
You're exactly
That
right. You're
in
exactly right.
combination with the fact that we now have video confirming that her own Secret Service detail clearly knew that this bomb discovered was fake. That's a good sort of starting point. And now hopefully the people listening to this narrative, like, okay, there's something weird here. Yeah, that's right. There's no way. All they've been telling us nonstop, domestic terrorism, there's no way. You know, ordinarily this would be the main talking point of January 6th, that
Not
Kamala Harris almost
nonstop,
got killed.
nonstop. They would never let that go. You would hear it
So
incessantly.
now let's get deeper into the rabbit hole, because that's just the beginning. So, second stage here. When was the DNC bomb discovered? It was discovered at around 1:05. Now, this was the second bomb discovered. Well, first, let's say it was discovered at 1:05. At the point at which it was discovered, it had been sitting there undiscovered for over 17 hours. Now, this is one of the first things that I thought was, you know, incredible and to the point of being unbelievable, because it was placed in a fairly conspicuous spot by a bench right outside the DNC. January 6th was a very high foot traffic day in the morning. No one walking by saw it. No motorists saw it. The regularly physically stationed security guard, who's physically stationed within feet of the bomb's location, didn't see it. And then the big whopper, the Secret Service of the United States, which we now have video that came out yesterday of them doing the sweep. There are two sweeps, not one, but two sweeps involving dogs who presumably had COVID that day, so they couldn't pick up the smell of the gunpowder, right? So they do two sweeps and they don't find it. So it's sitting out there for 17 hours. No motorists, no pedestrians, no one using a scooter that's stationed there, not the DNC security guard, and not the Secret Service of the United States that did two sweeps with two different dogs. They didn't find this thing lying out in the open. And yet it's discovered after 17 hours. And it just so happens to be discovered a mere 15 minutes after a first bomb was discovered near the RNC. Now let's get to that. Because that's a weird thing. Why would it be discovered within 15 minutes of this first one being discovered? Well, let's look at the circumstances under which that first bomb was discovered at the Capitol Hill Club, behind a trash can in a back alley by that Capitol Hill Club. It was discovered by a random pedestrian, we're told, at 12:40 p.m. This random pedestrian goes to security at the Capitol Hill Club. Actually, it's RNC security that she reaches first. They push it through the Capitol Hill Police, which have jurisdiction. Capitol Hill Police begin responding to this at 12:50. That Ray Epps breach at the west perimeter of the Capitol that I mentioned, that whole breach at the Peace Monument, that's a whole sort of Fed-saturated activity. We cover that in detail in our classic piece, Meet Ray Epps Part 2. That whole thing kicks off at exactly 12:53. So the Capitol Police begin responding to this first pipe bomb that was found at 12:50, a mere 3 minutes before that attack on the West Perimeter occurs. That's amazing timing. You think that's amazing timing? Karlyn Younger, the random pedestrian who found this pipe bomb, said when she found the bomb at 12:40, it was equipped with a mechanical kitchen hour-long timer, and it had 20 minutes left, and it was, in fact, stuck on the 20 minutes mark. So let's do the math. 12:40 plus 20 minutes equals 1 o'clock exactly, which happens to be the precise time that the certification of the vote proceeding was to begin in Congress. So let's step back and fully digest the probabilities here. We have a pipe bomb sitting behind a trash can in a back alley for over 16 hours, and it happens to be randomly discovered with almost perfect synchronicity with both the West Perimeter attack on the Capitol and the certification of the vote proceeding. And then all of a sudden, a mere 15 minutes later, the bomb that had been undiscovered for over 17 hours is found at the DNC. And so these two bombs, respectively, which were planted the evening before, we're told, have been sitting out there for 16 to 17 hours, undiscovered, and then they're stumbled on independently, coincidentally, within a 15-minute window that happens to perfectly coincide with the unfolding attack on the Capitol. The timing is so precise that the dominant theory, understandably so, by the former head of Capitol Police and many others, is that these bombs were never intended to go off. Remember, they only had an hour-long timer, so if they were to go off, wouldn't make much sense because they're planted the evening before. They would have gone off in a back alley at like 9 p.m. So what? And so instead of going off, they're both discovered in perfect synchronicity with the attack on the Capitol. And the dominant theory espoused by Steve Sund and others is that they're planted there for a diversionary purpose. That's all well and good, but how could this pipe bomber have counted on the fact that these bombs he planted the evening before would magically be discovered within that decisive 15-minute window corresponding with the unfolding attack?
And Darren, of
That's
course,
all of a luck. That forget about, a lottery ticket. This is Nostradamus. He should have bought lottery tickets, and instead of planting the bomb, he could have should have done Powerball or something like that. And so the timing there is really the smoking gun. The timing there doesn't make sense. And the timing, it's not just for the RNC, it's for the DNC, and they both happen independently. And I mean, it even gets worse from there because now we can talk about the surveillance footage, but I want to stop and kind of see if you have any reactions to
Yeah,
what
I
I just said.
mean, very often the person, quote unquote, discovering a bomb like that is considered a prime person of interest or suspect by law
Well,
enforcement. And
yes.
so this person who just happens to look behind a garbage can in an alley behind a building on Capitol Hill, and if you know the layout of the area we're talking about, and folks can and should examine that. It is quite extraordinary. And then this person, I'm sure you'll tell us about who this woman is. She has a very interesting background all unto herself that she should find a bomb.
Right. I definitely want to get just first I want to say, so the not the person who has the backpack who's depicted in the video discovering the DNC bomb, but someone who his partner who is present at when the DNC bomb was discovered. He was interviewed by congressional staff and congressmen and so forth, and some other people there. And you're asked, well, why wasn't there any kind of reaction when you're informed of this explosive device within feet of yourself and these other people? Why did you breach protocol that way? Their answer was totally unacceptable. The answer was literally, we didn't want to cause panic. Really? Look, as you mentioned, I used to work in the White House. I've dealt with Secret Service all the time. I think many people have dealt with them all the time. They are extremely serious about how they do things. There's no way in the world they're informed of a pipe bomb within feet of where they are and their protectee, and they allow children to walk right by it because they don't want to cause panic. Give me a break. Another thing is, the circumstances of the discovery of the DNC bomb are so weird and implausible, and due to the timing, 15 minutes after the first one. So you say, how did that happen? They said, well, we were originally at the site of the RNC bomb where it discovered, and once that was discovered, we thought, gee, we better take a look at the DNC. Like, that alone doesn't make any sense. The whole parallelism between RNC and DNC bomb is a retroactive fiction. The first bomb, the bomb that we call the RNC bomb, was in a back alley by the Capitol Hill Club. There's no way in the world anyone would find this and say, oh, well, this is kind of close to the DNC. There must be one at, this
Right.
kind of close to the
Right.
RNC. There must be one at DNC, as though this is like a gesture to bipartisanship. There's no way anyone would make that leap. And then what's
Right.
even more remarkable is, so then they say, oh, there must be one at the DNC. And then magically, 15 minutes later, they found this DNC bomb that was sitting out there undiscovered for over 17 hours, undiscovered even by the Secret Service. And so they're asked, okay, well, then why didn't you look for a third bomb? They're like, oh, good question. We don't know. Well, maybe the libertarian, headquarters aren't important enough. It's just a
Right,
bipartisan.
right.
It makes zero sense that, first of all, they would say, oh, there's one near the RNC. Let's go to the DNC. And they find it within 15 minutes. And then magically they decide that there's not going to be a third one. That just kind of deepens the whole implausibility and suspicion of it. And I guess we're kind of pressed for time, but I would encourage everyone, you mentioned, so how weird it was that this DNC one was sitting there for 17 hours undiscovered, to the point that originally I had my investigative team look into the question of whether it was actually planted when they said it was the evening before. So the FBI's presented surveillance footage seeming to confirm that. Well, we proved definitively two things. One, the FBI's withholding footage that would settle the question of whether it was planted when they said it was. They have two cameras, both DNC cameras, incidentally, of those benches where the pipe bomber planted the bomb. Two different cameras with two different angles. We've seen footage from both cameras. However, the footage that they show us of the pipe bomber actually planting the bomb is from the camera with a bad angle. Why would you choose to show us the footage from the bad angle when showing us the other camera, whose footage we know you have because you've shown us other things from it, would settle the question definitively as to whether it was planted when you said it was? No answer to that. Secondly, the frame rate on this footage is 1.6 frames per second. That's unheard of. The lowest level commercially available surveillance cameras have 8 frames per second. You go on a random road trip in the middle of nowhere and go to the most middle of nowhere gas station you can find. The camera there is going to have 8 frames per second. So it's not just that the DNC, this high profile building with high profile employees, high profile visitors in a high crime city, a institution that really, remember, the break into the DNC, this was at another location, but a break into DNC catalyzed one of the biggest American scandals in history. And we're supposed to believe that they went for the cheapest possible surveillance camera, but it's actually worse than that. Because they couldn't get the cheapest available, because the cheapest available is 8 frames per second.
It doesn't
They
even
would have had
exist.
to go, have gone to like an antique store to find one of the five available like antique cameras
Right.
with 1.6 frames per second.
Right.
Give me a break. And so, I'm just kind of rushing here because we're pressed for time. I'd love to do like a part two with you so we can do it more casually because there's so much information here. But you asked me about the quote unquote random pedestrian who found this pipe bomb at near the DNC that was sitting behind a trash can
Yeah,
for over
it's
16 hours.
important.
And then she finds it, like in perfect timing to the West Perimeter breach. At that time, she was working for an emergency response company called FirstNet Authority, which has interesting connections with the government, has on its board the head of the DHS and head of the DOJ. And now she happens to be working for a company called Pendulum, which, get this, does the important work of fighting disinformation narratives on behalf of their government clients. And their disinformation priorities just happen to perfectly align with the publicly stated censorship priorities of the Department of Homeland Security and its ill-fated Disinformation Governance Board.
All just a
So,
coincidence.
yeah,
All
that's
just a remarkable coincidence, that's all.
so now let me just wrap it up because we're pressed for time and I hope I can come on again. I'm
Sure.
gonna get back to the context and the stakes. So the damage control, like this, the regime used to be in suppression mode over this story, which is going to be like the biggest scandal in recent American history. This is a huge scandal, a huge operative. operation and a huge scandal. They moved from suppression mode to damage control mode. One thing they're going to try to do is contain the scandal simply to the pipe bomb issue, but they're not going to be able to do that. And this is why. The timing is the smoking gun. They cannot prevent the pipe bomb scandal, which is huge enough in its own right, from metastasizing to other elements of the what I call Fedsurrection, because the timing of the pipe bomb's discovery is perfectly synchronized with that initial breach at the West Perimeter by the Peace Monument. And that breach has been a subject of our major piece, Meet Ray Epps Part Two, which is not just about Epps, it's about all of the highly suspicious activity surrounding that first breach. So the fact that the discovery of these bombs was perfectly synchronized to this Fed-saturated Peace Monument breach means that it will metastasize, and ultimately, and probably quite soon, the story of that first breach and the story of the pipe bomb will converge. What does this mean? Well, if the pipe bomb story is a hoax, which it is, and if the initial breach of the Capitol at the West Perimeter was a Fed-saturated operation, which it was, then the entirety of January 6 is a Fed's direction. The pipe bombs are a hoax. If the first decisive breach that kicked it all off was a hoax, then January 6 is absolutely not what the government has made it out to be. It is a Fedsurrection, not an insurrection. And that's important because it's this Fedsurrection, the narrative of the insurrection, that they're trying to portray everybody as domestic terrorists. If you went to a Trump rally, if you agree with some things he said, if you're worried about an immigration problem on our border, anything like that. They're using the false story of January 6 as the predominant pretext through which to weaponize our nation's national security apparatus, which is supposed to be there to keep us safe, but they're repurposing it to politically silence us and even throw some people in jail for having the wrong political opinions. And they're using it to remove Trump from ballots through extracurricular means. And it's all based on an absolutely blatant and flagrant lie.
Darren, where do folks go to see your work and to learn more about this incredible story?
Absolutely. Go to revolver.news. Revolver.news will have some of the main pieces already set up at the top for the convenience of the audience. You can also go to our exclusives page and peruse. We've done probably 8 or 9 major stories on the pipe bomb alone. But I recommend just go and see. We're going to have it curated. So go to revolver.news. We'll have Meet Ray Epps Part Two. That's the piece about that initial breach. And we'll have our definitive piece, sort of comprehensive, that lays out the whole thing for the pipe bomb. And that'll get you started. And it should be enough if you're not you hadn't been familiar with this story. Yes, that kind of stuff does happen. It does happen in this country, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. But this happens to be the latest and most relevant one for the moment. So read it, please. Share it, please. It's very important.
Darren Beatty, founder of Revolver News. Thanks for joining us on Watch.
Thank you so much.
I'm Chris Farrell on Watch.